Is it possible that we could get waves that high, water levels that high, where ice could go up to the top of skyscrapers?
Yeah, you know, I mean, go 12,000 years ago, 15,000 years ago, and go to where Minneapolis is today, and there's not a building there that wouldn't have been covered under ice. And so the answer is, yeah, sure. You know, it depends on where, you know, where the magnetic pole is located and how that drives systems, and then where, you know, where the distribution of heat on the planet starts to shift, and then you get these kinds of glacial periods where exactly that can happen. And it's not over millions of years. It's over thousands and tens of thousands of years.
What happens, Nick, if everything happens at the same time? We get, let's say, more of a polar shift, and it's starting now, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Or a major earthquake, you know, that just blackens the skies for months. Hurricanes at that same time. The Midwest gets hit with tornadoes. Is it possible that, you know, unlike the movie The Perfect Storm, for example, is it possible that if all this happened at the same time, we could really be in for it?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, when you ask anyone in any of these areas hit by disasters, you know, I mean, they are, you know, they're not in for it. They just had it, you know. And when you look at it, think about the 80s, and we had a lot of things going on. And I remember the early 80s, the droughts and the heat waves we were having in those days. And then the 90s came along, and everything was like double, triple, quadruple the number of dollars and damages, and eventually 10 times as much. We went into this decade, and we said, starting in the mid-90s, you know, you haven't seen anything yet, when everyone thought that was so extreme. And we've been saying it consistently, backed up by the scientific evidence, and we see it here in Alaska in a lot of different ways. You know, there was several years ago, we observed in 97, 98, that time frame, there was an observation made that the ocean temperatures off the coastal areas of Alaska had increased 5 to 15 degrees in temperature. And you could perceive it that year, and it was countercyclic to El Nino, so you couldn't blame that. And so everyone's wandering around wondering what the cause is. Well, it's obvious. It's a heat release in the oceans. And because they couldn't locate or pinpoint the sources of that specific heat, they never attributed it to that. They just said, oh, an anomaly that happened to affect sea life, which drove certain species of fish down too deep, killed off a bunch of birds that couldn't feed. That happened again this year. And none of it makes the mainstream, because when you walk along a beach for 100 miles, there's not one single soul on it. No one notices, you know, except very few people that live in these rural parts of our state. And as a, you know, we have more coastline in Alaska than the east, west, and Gulf Coast of the United States combined. And we have a population that you could fit into a neighborhood in L.A. And so when you think about all that, the extremes are happening here. You know, on the northern slope of Alaska, we had these little black flies all the time that were real irritating, in fact, horrible, you know. But mosquitoes, which Alaska is famous for, they didn't really exist up there until the last few years, because they couldn't make it through the winters, you know, in terms of their life cycle.
Right.
The other thing that's happening on the north slope of Alaska is, and across Canada and Siberia, is the melting of permafrost. And people go, well, you know, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China? Well, permafrost acts like a cap, keeping decaying and releasing natural methane from releasing into the environment. And when it starts releasing in mass because of changes in temperature, then you have this accelerating. It sort of builds on itself. It contributes to the greenhouse gas effect. It's, again, a natural thing, but it contributes dramatically to those greenhouse gases, causing things to heat up even faster, causing that process to accelerate. Consequently, you get this ever-accelerating, steeper-running curve, which is what everyone's finally observing, and we've been saying has been occurring for you know, years. For over a decade, we've been saying that.
See, I think, Nick, if we stopped every automobile that's using fossil fuels now, if we stopped every factory, if we just stopped, I still think this cycle's going to continue.
And you're absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct on that. I mean, certainly there are some things that we can do, you know, that make sense and that can be, you know, can be dealt with. I mean, I think the hydrogen concepts of a hydrogen economy are good ones. There's lots of things going on in real inventive and creative alternate energy sources, and I think those things will come within the next decade or so, because just if you get a look at the other side of my life is technologies, and you see those solutions coming as well. But when you look at global change and the impact of it, here's a good example. You know, what happens when the permafrost melts? you know, all these pipelines carrying oil from the northern regions of the world, including 20% of domestic oil, a third of our pipeline in that part of the world, all of the pipeline is elevated on these piers that are driven into the earth that have heat dissipators, because the oil comes out of the ground about 130 degrees, and so they have to make sure it doesn't melt anything, so they have it up high. Well, when the ground begins to destabilize under it, you're going to be in a constant state, and we already are, of having to go in and adjust things because of sinking and rising and all the effects of changes in the permafrost layer. And that's going to become more extreme and really runs a risk of temporarily or periodically shutting down oil supplies coming from these northern regions such as Alaska. So again, we need to kind of prepare for that, to be ready and understand what we need to have on hand and available to deal with that, so we don't have serious problems beyond just restabilizing the pipeline periodically.
What do you see as the biggest problem, natural or otherwise, right now?
I think it's natural causes. I think the general contribution of heat releases as well as magnetic shifts in the poles are causing chaos in all of our geophysical systems, and we're seeing it manifest in numerous ways. If you look at, for instance, tidal heights in the North Sea, which we reported on back in 1994, were rising over a 30-year period, and they're rising even more since. So you see this shift in tidal heights. That's based on all kinds of dynamics that we don't fully understand, but we're seeing that. We're seeing increase in frequency of earthquakes and their intensity. We're seeing increases by doubling and tripling and quadrupling in terms of storms and intensities of storms and damage caused by them. So these things are all happening simultaneously. When you think about ocean temperature changes, that affects potentially a whole source of protein. I mean, when you think of the oceans and the changes that can occur in food supplies because of changes, those are pretty dramatic. When you look at magnetic field line shifts, those affect, many believe now that the species that migrate don't do so by smell or by land formation, but actually by orienting along magnetic field lines, which literally follow basically similar paths. And then you see these bizarre appearances of migratory species in the wrong places at the wrong times. And it all makes sense when you think about the shifts in the magnetic fields, and that these are the things that, these are the road maps that these species follow. And it's going to have a dramatic effect in Arctic regions and other regions literally around the world, because many of these species are interrelated and are important as food supplies for local populations.